Yeah.
I just love a big, strong man who's not afraid to show it with someone half his size. Be gentle, it's my first time. Thanks, you make it so easy, don't you? Always waiting for some bad man to save you. I am Catwoman. Hear me roar.
Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 134. It's another hectic week. It's always a hectic week with everybody. Everybody has size and stuff like that. But we're coming here this week for another fun-filled episode. Before we get to what we're talking about, let's introduce our panel of, I guess, adaptologists. My favorite part of my favorite part of any episode is making up the titles that we're going to adapt for the for the episode. And the problem with that is I usually don't think of it until I start doing the introductions. It's usually just derails us because then everybody's wondering why. I guess because I think NBC executives, and that just kind of went off on its own little tangent. But yes, that's Wesley.
Yes, hi. No insert witty line here.
And we're going to kind of steal him from his other show, even though he's returning here. We have Anthony.
Yeah, I'm back. Hello.
Hey, Anthony's back.
So, I believe we have an Iron Man 3 review up on... Actually, Anthony did the Iron Man 3 review for the site.
I did, yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
And so instead of rehashing that and talking about Iron Man 3 again, especially being that it's a month old at this point, we decided to kind of take an aspect of Iron Man and focus on that for this episode. And that aspect was the personification of the Mandarin in the film, which a lot of comic book fans had issues with. So
no, they didn't have issues with that at all.
So yeah, we're gonna take that. We're going to talk about that. But we're also going to expand it and look at some of the best and worst adaptations of comic book characters onto the big screen. Because I mean, the Mandarin, and we'll get to this in a bit. I think we all are in agreement that we didn't have any issue with it. But there have been, I think, there's been more grievous. Well, let's just get this out of the way. Bane and Batman and Robin has to be the worst.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
I forgot about that one. Yeah. I always seem to forget about that movie. I wonder why.
Yeah, it's like, it's really weird. That movie has enough problems. It's, be polite. And then here's Bane. Oh, my.
Yeah, and you know, just kind of the thing with it is that it literally robs the character of everything that makes him interesting. Because even from his debut, Bane was never played up as a big hulking brute. His debut was creating a riot so that Batman would be, you know, distracted and fatigued so that he could easily break him. That's not something an idiot does. That's not something somebody who goes.
He's always represented smart. He's a strategist. He's an intelligent villain.
Yes, he's an extremely intelligent villain, and that's what made him such a threat, is that he's intelligent and he's strong. I mean, most of the time Batman beats him, it's because, I mean, he's in most of the, you know, other mediums. I'm sure it's different in comic books, but most of the time he's defeated. It's usually by some luck of getting that tube out of him so he kind of deflates and stuff like that. But, yeah, I would have to say that Bane is up there, and
Mr. Freeze.
Here's the thing with Mr. Freeze. As far as my comic book history with the character goes, is that Mr. Freeze wasn't a well-defined villain at that time. Like, he really was kind of hokey up until Batman the Animated Series,
yeah,
which does predate.
Off
the top of my head.
Movie.
Off the top of my head, I actually can't think of a Batman comic I've read that's had Mr. Freeze in it. Although,
yeah.
There's probably like The Long Halloween and Hush, but they've got every Batman villain in it, so they don't really count. But
I mean, the other thing is, and you know, just kind of going back and forth between this, is it's much easier to do in the animated series where you can say that we're only going to use like 4 episodes and that's it. Like a comic book, yeah, granted, you could say that with a comic book, but let's be honest, one person says that and another guy comes, oh, I want to do a Mr. Freeze story. How can we do a Mr. Freeze story where we have to make him the villain? He can't really be sympathetic every time you see him.
Oh, actually, I just remembered Scott Snyder used him in the Batman annual, didn't he? That was actually that was a good annual, yeah.
That's really good. And there's also a very underrated story that Legends of the Dark Knight did with called Snow that has a Mr. Freeze in it that was drawn by Seth Fisher. That's really good. It's in trade, actually.
But yeah, I wouldn't say that was a bad characterization of Mr. Freeze. I would just say that it's a bad character, but I mean, at the time, it's really, there wasn't much to work with from Mr. Freeze.
So I
wouldn't call that a bad adaptation. I would just call it a bad character at the time. I mean, going back to where we started, we actually haven't touched the Mandarin. I didn't have any issues with it because in the context of the movie, it worked.
It's hilarious.
Which I think I always think that's the biggest concern with adaptation is if it works in what you're doing, not necessarily if it's true to the source material, but if it works in the sense of this film, and it does.
Go for it, Anthony.
No, I was just gonna say it's also really in keeping with the humor that Marvel has in all of their movies as well, like with the lightheartedness to them, and you know, yeah.
Well, I mean, you could have done lightheartedness and still kind of made him a threat, but I do think the idea of, you know, especially when you played opposite of Tony Stark, because Tony Stark is one of the few characters in. I guess Marvel's a lot more open in general, but unlike Batman, who has a secret identity, and then Bruce Wayne in his face, Tony Stark and Iron Man are both covered figures. So it kind of makes sense that on the Fifth side, you have a villain who has a secret identity, and he has this public face that he puts on to get what he wants. So it's kind of the reverse of what you see in a typical, you know, comic book where the hero's the one with a secret identity. And again, it's, you know, and it works because even with the reveal, we still had a bad guy who was there throughout the course of the movie who had his role, and you can kind of, it's not like, oh, it's not the Mandarin, so here's this plot twist that we didn't see coming. Like, you knew that it's not him. What is his name?
Killian.
Killian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he had to be in it on some capacity, so. It made sense in that regard, so I didn't have any issues with
it. And my thought on that is, I mean, one, when you realize the movie was going to be based off of extremists, and then I saw the Mandarin involved, I went, wait a second, hold up here. We're going to have a Mandarin story in the midst of the extremist story. How is this? And then once the movie had that mid-twist, it's like, there we go. Makes sense now. And of course, Ben Kingsley as Trevor Slattery is one of the most glorious things. It's like, hi, I'm Trevor. Trevor Slattery. How about you?
Yes, he was awesome in that. And, you know, and I think the other thing that they did well was once they rebuilt him, they didn't play their hands up too much. Like, he pretty much exits the movie at that point. Like, he comes in for one or two additional scenes, but. He's pretty much gone after that.
After he talks about the plan, he pretty much goes, and they're like, well, why didn't you call us? Like, huh? I handled it. I swear, he was just, like, going for it. Like, screw it, I'm playing this drug-addled stage actor, and I'm just loving every minute of this.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, you know, it worked, and as if we're going with adaptation, so I mean, we have to mention Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark.
Perfect.
I mean, if nothing else, I think Iron Man 2, 3...
Tony Stark.
Proved that. Because I would say that I felt like this movie would not have worked as well if he was not Iron Man. He carries the weight of this film with his charisma and charm, because I think it's an enjoyable movie, but I do feel that it's lacking in some regards. But I feel like with him as the center, like, you don't really get upset at it because he's always so good in it.
He's on his game the entire time. Yeah. And I don't envy them once I have to try to replace him as Iron Man.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing, because I feel like of all the comic book characters, there are, I think Christopher Reeve as Superman, I think Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man would probably have to be the two biggest that I feel like are so iconic in the actor's portrayal. That, I mean, we even saw that with Superman Returns, where Brandon Routh is putting on a poor Christopher Reeve's performance for that entire movie. I mean, Batman got off lucky because, I mean, just with the, you know, we've had Adam West, we had Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney, and I think everybody brought something to the role. I mean, even with Christian Bale, who I love in the role, most people would say that they could see somebody improving on the voice.
Yeah, it's like the Christian Bale Batman. The evolution of it's the first movie, he sounds kind of normal, and then the second movie, full on voice. He is just full on gravel voice.
Well, at least no one figured out it was Bruce Wayne under the mask. So you know,
that was always cool. And I always, I think that's the other thing with a lot of Batman actors, at least to me, is always that I feel like everybody brings something different, except for George Clooney.
Poor George Clooney.
Oh, I mean, like,
he's just George Clooney, though, isn't he, really?
George Clooney.
Because I like Val Kilmer as Bruce Wayne. He brings a kind of subtle, like, he's not dark, he's messed up, but he's kind of like somebody who's relatively normal, but you know is kind of hiding a secret. And I think Michael Keaton does it as well. But Michael Keaton, if you ever see Michael Keaton in anything, that's Michael Keaton's default expression.
Yeah.
So, you know, but Michael Keaton also, you know, Michael Keaton worked as Batman because he had that kind of, there's nothing to Michael Keaton. and that's why he worked. Christian Bale works as Batman because he has that intensity to him. He also works as Bruce Wayne when Bruce Wayne is being that ass. Like, when he has to be, like, Bruce Wayne the human, which you don't see that often, it's kind of iffy.
He's pretty it's kind of funny, because he actually is, that he's just one of the things, when you see him as Bruce Wayne, he can play either way fairly well. I mean, yes, of course, because I think everyone and their brother, including me and everyone else, has made the joke of the Batman voice, but that's what he chose, and there we are.
Now, kind of going to the other side, and I don't know if you folks necessarily agree with this, but one that I always thought was really poor, and this kind of goes back to the Christopher Reeve thing, was, what is his name? The guy who plays Lex Luthor in Superman Returns.
Kevin Spacey? Oh, I love Kevin Spacey.
I liked him in that movie.
You see, to me, Kevin Spacey was playing a Superman, a Lex Luthor from 30 years ago, and I don't think that's the Luthor that we expect or want nowadays.
Now, okay, this is going to be related to this, but also, Kevin Spacey was playing Gene Hackman.
Yes,
he was straight up playing Gene Hackman. Any glitch you could find with Superman Returns, it's one of the things where you can't hardly blame it on the actors. It's one of those films where...
I don't blame it on the actors.
It's a fun movie, isn't it?
Yeah, I blame all the Superman Returns easily on Bryan Singer.
Bryan Singer, because Bryan Singer was like, I want to make a movie like Richard Donner. Like, oh no. Oh no. Oh boy, we're in for it now, aren't we? He's like slavishly devoted to Richard Donner's vision and didn't find his own.
There's no problem making a film that pays homage to the Superman that came before it. It's a problem when you're trying to get everybody to mimic
slavishly devoted to it, though. I mean,
and the things that he added himself, like the son storyline, were the bits that were really bad in the film.
Well,
that
stuff hurt.
That's when it started getting really bad.
It's like, and that's because I actually kind of enjoy like how Kevin Spacey's playing Gene Hackman Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
And
but I don't like that Luthor anymore.
He's selling
I think he's good in the performance. I don't, you know, like he, you know, he's hammy, he's over the top.
And it's awesome.
Which works for the Gene Hackman Lex Luthor, but that Gene Hackman Lex Luthor was a product of the 70s and 80s. We moved on to the I mean, granted, the Evil Businessman next year is more of a product of the 80s, but that's the one we have now, and that's the one people are accustomed to. And it's not like something people became accustomed to overnight. It was something that, it was in Smallville. We had the Evil Luthers.
Smallville has its own share of problems.
It has its own share of problems, but that was the thing. They had the evil, granted, it was the father, but it was the Evil Businessman.
If we dive into Smallville, Earl, you realize we're in Bird Down a Rabbit Hole. I don't think we want to go down.
Okay, so we won't quit. But yeah, I mean, that. So like I said, I think it's, I don't think he's bad in the role. I just didn't think it was a poor adaptation of the character that was
mentioned. I can give you that. I mean, though, of course, I'm kind of disappointed that they wouldn't have had in, like, any of the movies, that they never had Lex Luthor use his dang power suit in any of the movies.
Even that, I would have accepted. That would make Superman Returns better.
It would have, actually.
The Kryptonite audience.
Hilarious. You imagine Kevin Spacey playing Gene Hackman Lex Luthor in the green-purple power suit?
The green and purple power suit.
That would have been the best thing ever.
Granted, it would probably be the Batman and Robin of the Superman films, but I want to see
why people would have better memories of it.
At least we would have got a decent action scene other than the plane crash.
Yeah.
It would have been hilarious.
Yeah. It's actually, going back to, talking about Uther. Uther has been the villain in 4 of the 5 Superman films to date. And as far as I know, he hasn't really been a physical threat to Superman. That would have been something different because we saw the whole end scheme thing before. So it wasn't even like a new plot for this guy. It's like, I tried this once before. Let me try it again. if we were going to beat up on Superman Returns, which I will do in like 2 weeks on the Man of Steel cast that we have going on the site. What are some other inspired or uninspired picks for?
I've got an adaptation that I really don't like, and you two are probably going to agree with me actually, and it's Galactus in Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer. Silver Surfer is pretty cool in that film, but Galactus as the giant cloud is terrible, and then he reappears again in the Green Lantern right at the end.
Green Lantern, because you realize you could do an entire thing on, but actually Green Lantern, that movie, another movie in which Green Lantern, you can kind of blame the actors, but at the same time, it's a lot of that is everyone going, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have Parallax. You know what we're going to do? We're going to make him a cloud. Yeah.
At some point, you have to say, okay, we don't have the budget for this. Let's make a villain that works for our budget.
And you know what we're going to do? We're going to have Hal Jordan make a Hot Wheels track. And then we're going to have
the Hot Wheels track. The Hot Wheels track is my favorite scene in the film,
actually. Well, what's funny
is he's using some imagination with his ring.
The exposition scene they actually do. It's like, I love how they do an exposition scene, because actually someone reminded me of this. I'm like, oh, okay. it didn't really bother me, but I could see why it would bother some people, because I was having one conversation. He was like, I hate that scene. And I'm like, it's not that bad, but I can see why it would annoy people. I mean, some more traditionalists would probably prefer him using like a boxing glove,
That's the thing, because I don't want to see Green Lantern just make guns and swords with his ring. I want to see him like create something with some imagination with it, which is why I really like the Hot Wheels scene.
I'll give you it. I think it's because of the budget. I think it's because one of those things which I think that's why it annoys some people, because they said they spent half their budget on that damn scene.
There's a lot of things they didn't have to make the costume CG. I don't even remember that. Thing that mattered in the film.
Ryan Reynolds, he tried.
I hate Ryan Reynolds. I think he's a decent, but Hollywood needs to stop trying to make him a leading man. It hasn't.
No,
half a decade.
Character.
He's at best he's a supporting character. I mean, we've seen him in comedies that have failed. We've seen him in action movies that have failed. We're going to see him again in a movie this summer that's going to fail. Like, at some point, you have to just say, okay, Ryan Reynolds isn't going to happen.
You're a good supporting character. You're a character actor. Enjoy it. You'll have plenty of gigs, man.
But yeah, the two cloud beasts from space, Galactus and Parallax, are
crossover.
I brought up Galactus, right, and I appreciate the fact that Galactus is this big human. Oh shit, what are they called now in the Marvel universe? Oh fuck, it's completely gone. He's like this eternal thing. Wesley, what's the name of him?
Oh, are you talking about the Celestials?
That's it, yeah, Celestial. Yeah, that's what the word I was looking for. I just completely got. Right, he's this big giant purple Celestial, which is probably hard to do in a film, but they could have at least tried to do something a bit better than a big cloud, which was it didn't even look threatening at all. It was just looked like a bit of bad weather.
And also, if you want to dive into anything really weird, Fantastic Four, I actually posted up on my Twitter the other day. I found the scene in the animated series of Fantastic Four in which Ghost Rider made Galactus feel bad. Yeah. You want to get into bad adaptations? You want to get into weird crap? Ghost Rider makes Galactus feel bad.
Well, apparently Galactus gets around if he's fighting Wolverine as well.
No, it's like there's a scene like right near the end of the episode where Galactus is about to start feeding on her, and then Ghost Rider comes in and is like, "I'm going to use the Panther on you, and you shall learn of the pain you have caused across the universe." And Galactus is like, "No," and he goes away.
Well, they'd already used the Ultimate Neurofire in an earlier episode.
Yeah,
so,
like they have Ghost Rider come in and Ghost Rider, and you're like, it is one of the funniest and most random Ghost Rider appearances. And you're like, well, there we are. 90s.
Getting back to one that I...
It fits in adaptations, Earl, at least.
Yeah, I think here's one that people would agree with. Batman Forever, oh. Two-Face and Richard, take your pick.
Oh, I always liked them when I was a kid, but as I've got older, I've realized the problems. But when I first watched Batman Forever, and until pretty much Batman Begins came out, I did always used to like them too, just because I thought they were like just a really good duo. Lee Jones as like this really serious grumpy guy, and then
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey. He's just winding him up for the whole
thing. Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, the problem with that is, I feel, and this happens in a lot of popular movies, I would say the Bond film franchise suffers from this as well, is that they have like this one ideal villain that they keep on striving to replicate. So you have Two-Face and Richard acting like the Joker.
Okay.
And it doesn't work if both villains are acting like the Joker.
Well,
oh yeah.
Riddler was more Jim Carrey paying homage to Frank Gorshin, and if you really, I mean, cause, you know, really, it's like Jim Carrey is Jim Carrey playing the Riddler by way of Frank Gorshin. I mean, the entire movie, and that it's why I can't like Tommy Lee Jones. I have more of an issue with in that film because he's not bad, but it's kind of like it's okay. But Riddler, like Jim Carrey's just. I don't mind him, his crazy over-the-top Riddler that much. I really don't. It's actually strangely entertaining. Because you realize what he's doing.
Yeah, I will say this much, and I, you know, this is a point you brought up, is that I don't necessarily think these performances are bad. I actually don't think a couple of these performances we talked about are bad. Like, you can have a good performance that just isn't really what the character
Correct.
Is, though.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to get at, is that some of these are the Riddler, and you know, some comic book writers say the Riddler as a, you know, form of the Joker, but he's supposed to be a man of intelligence, not a man of chaos, not a man of jokes. And that's not what Jim Carrey's Riddler was. I mean, yeah, I say he's playing the Joker, but to be fair, Jim Carrey playing Jim Carrey.
It's just Jim Carrey playing Frank Gorshin. I mean, that's the way to sum it up, is it's
Jim Carrey cosplaying as the Riddler dressed as Frank Gorshin.
Correct. Because Frank Gorshin, I mean, if anyone ever watched 60s Batman just enough, Frank Gorshin plays the Riddler with a good deathbed of intelligence, yes, there is intelligence in that Riddler. Watch the show. It's actually there. And it is fun. And he's probably, his appearance is some of the best part episodes of the show, because he actually plays a pretty, even in the midst of the campy over-the-topness of that, of the Batman show, it's still kind of like, and that's what Jim Carrey was trying to emulate, was that style of Riddler. Not totally successful, but, you know, it wasn't too bad, and it's kind of fun to watch. When you look at it like that, now back in the day, yeah, it wasn't, but now you're kind of like, okay, I can see what he was trying to do.
Yeah, and again, you know, it works, and it really depends on my mood and how often how recently I've watched other Batman films. I can go either way on Batman Forever, depending on the day of the week.
At least Batman Forever doesn't have the Bat card.
It doesn't have, there's some, like, I always just say Joygasm. That's such an
Joygasm!
See, very few people are both a summer and a winter, but you managed to put, you know, like, there's a lot of cheesy and hokey lines, but I will forgive him for that. But, you know, Richard being one of my personal favorite, if not my favorite Batman villain, it was just kind of one of those, yeah, this isn't what I expected from him, type deals. And again, especially off the back of, you know, we had the Batman animated series at that time,
yeah,
which had the fantastic, you know, if you're so smart, why aren't you rich? And Rich's Reform and all those other amazing episodes. So yeah, I mean, are there any others you folks want to talk about before I go on?
Anne Hathaway's Catwoman was amazing. Oh gosh,
that was very good.
Yeah,
that was the one. I mean, to be fair, I would also bring up Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah,
I think that. I would think all of the Catwomen on screen have done a fantastic job, except for Halle Berry.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. But before we get into Halle Berry, I just want to say, the thing with Anne Hathaway, it's kind of like Aaron Eckhart in The Dark Knight. She kind of gets overlooked in the movie because of Bane, like Aaron Eckhart does in gets overlooked because of the Joker, but she is, like, really, really good in The Dark Knight Rises, and a perfect portrayal of the character, in my opinion. And I just...
Yeah,
and it doesn't hurt seeing her on that bike in her leather outfit, but, you know.
Never a bad thing.
I mean, the thing that they get, and I think Batman Returns goes for a different thing altogether, is that you really do kind of feel for her. Like, she's never come off as evil. She always comes up as a, you know, she's trying to survive, and sometimes that means making bad decisions or dumb decisions, but it's never, like, out of malice or greed or anything. And that's a very hard giant to walk, not just in comic book adaptation, but I think in any genre, trying to get a character that you relate to who's not necessarily doing it. Like, she portrays Batman, like, 60 times throughout the movie, but you still kind of cheer for her.
And the scenes she has with Bruce and Batman, they're really good scenes as well. Like, the chemistry Christian Bale and Anne Hathaway have together is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have Halle Berry, who is terrible.
I tried watching some of that the other day. It was on. I tried watching it.
Oh.
Well, okay. No. Well, just before we get there, I will just say this much about her. In her defense... she was not playing a Catwoman from the comic books, because I've never heard of that character before. So, you know, she had that going for her.
There's very little in that movie that's good. You can nitpick at the CGI, that's also terrible. But the whole story, it's really not a good movie at all.
Or the fact that she's turning into an actual cat.
Yeah.
The only way I can watch that film is when, like, a reviewer is making fun of it. Like, that's, like, the only way I can even, like, handle that film is just watching it through, like, the little clips they show during a comedy review of it. Because trying to watch that movie without any sort of filter, oh.
So, I will say this much, and I have no tolerance for this. It has one of my favorite lines in a movie. Like, one of those, it's so bad, it's good. It's like during a climactic fight between her and Sharon Stone, I think. It's like, game over. Catwoman's like, no, overtime. I'm like, this is so goddamn bad. Somebody got paid to write this. And somebody got paid to say this on screen.
So you have to give Halle Berry credit for that horrible thing. When that movie won the Razzie, she came down to that Razzie ceremony.
Oh, yeah, she did, didn't she? But didn't she get the Oscar, like, the next night or something for,
No, she had an Oscar. Yeah, she came with it. I think it was Sandra Bullock who came with her Oscar, because I think she won an Oscar and a Razzie in the same weekend.
All right, okay.
And Halle Berry was the one that came to the Razzie Award and just owned it. Just said, yep.
Mm-hmm. See, that's what puts me off wanting a Anne Hathaway spin-off movie, just because of how that Catwoman movie turned out. It's like, ugh.
Here's the problem, and this is a problem with... I don't remember my extra as well, but I just recently watched Supergirl for the Superman podcast series that we're doing, and I've watched Catwoman. And the problem with the female-centric superhero movies is that they try to make it a female power movie. And, you know, this is going to sound bad, but I don't think that's the direction they should be going. Because even in Catwoman, like, the entire movie's about a makeup product.
Mm.
Supergirl ends up going to high school, and I still don't know why in the film.
What?
And it's just...
Yeah.
Why don't you make an action film with a female lead? And, you know, make it a normal movie. Don't make it like, okay, we're going to have, you know, this is a girl movie. It's going to be about makeup. It's going to be about schools. And like in Supergirl, the main character, Supergirl, and the main villain have a crush on the same guy. And that's how they kind of intertwine. And it's like, no.
It's like throw darts and go, okay, girl movie. Okay, we're going to have, okay, this is going to be here. Okay, throw a dart. Okay, that'll work.
Neither one of you have seen Fast 6 yet, but there are, you know, what else going to mention? There are two fight scenes between Gina Carano. I want to write my name.
Yeah, that's what I want to see for, really, the fight between her and Michelle Rodriguez.
That looks fun.
Is it in the London Underground?
Yeah, they have two fights. There's one in the London Underground, and there's another one I won't spoil. And it is some of the most brutal fights I've ever seen between two females on screen, and it's amazing! Because they actually, you know, like both of them, they're like tough chicks, and they can fight. So it kind of, you know, gives some type of credibility to that scene. But the fact of the matter is, we don't see that often in movies.
Mm.
Like, even going back to Halle Berry, she has a fight against, not Elizabeth Banks, but the character, she didn't die another day, and she has a fight with the main bad girl in the climax of the film. And that's really just a... You know, like a very soft fight.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, these two chicks, like at one point I thought she snapped the girl's neck. It's a very vicious and brutal fight. And it's like, you know what? Give them time, you know, give them an actual action movie and they can go. And, you know, part of it is like, and this is kind of why you had Michelle Rodriguez and Gina in this film. And this is always an issue with action films. It's like guys, they don't like showing guys getting beat up by females because it makes the guys look weak. And you can't have a female threat unless it's dealing with something girly like cosmetics. So, let's go back. Any other good ones that we want to throw out there or terrible ones we might have missed?
I want to mention Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, who I prefer as Peter Parker in Spider-Man over Tobey Maguire, even though the movie he's in might not necessarily be as good as some of the Raimi ones, but I think it's a better portrayal of both Spider-Man and Peter Parker.
And Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, and Gwen, and Emma Stone.
I don't know if the third Gwen Stacy counts, but it is a better portrayal.
Well, the what bothered me with Spider-Man 3 is they've got Gwen Stacy in it, and I think the scene she's introduced in is where she's being like this model, and she's having these pictures taken, and it's like, that's not Gwen at all. Gwen's, like, just, no.
Mm-hmm.
She's more of, how Emma Stone, well, not Emma Stone's playing her, but how she's written in The Amazing Spider-Man is, like, slightly the, like, smarter girl, because, you know, so.
Yeah, it was, like, it's this weird thing, because... You know, I guess you needed some way to concept balance Mary Jane, and I guess falling for the nerd in college or post-college doesn't work.
Yeah, I suppose. But they wrote themselves into that corner, though, so that's their own fault.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where we've seen it happen before. You write yourself into a corner and you try to get out of it, but it doesn't always work sometimes. I mean, I guess we don't see it that often. Or I guess because it's the same thing with, and we kind of mentioned Christopher Reeve, but I also want to say Margaret Kidder, as I was saying, was a fantastic casting choice. But, yeah, that's kind of what happened with the Superman franchise. Granted, part of it was because Margaret Kidder wanted to leave after they got rid of Richard Donner, mm-hmm. but... Like, after, like, they said the, and this is kind of true to a huge extent, it's like the Lois and Superman relationship kind of ended with Superman 2. Because, what do you do? Like, they kind of did the relationship thing, it didn't work out, they can't be together.
But mind wipes, come on, Earl. She gets mind wipes.
Yeah, she gets mind wipes, but Superman didn't.
Yeah.
So, kind of, so the next movie, you kind of have him go out with his high school sweetheart. And
that was kind of
neat because it was nice seeing somebody interested in Clark Kent, not Superman necessarily. Mm. I haven't seen Superman 4 right recently. I don't remember what's the relationship between Clark and Lois in that.
I don't think Lois is it. I think the
no,
the,
she's in it. She's
the,
in all
the romance them. Thing, and that is there's some new. I think there's a new character that starts working at the Daily Planet. And that, which adds some friction. So I think Lois isn't actually, and it adds some friction between her and Clark, possibly. Or I could have just completely made that up out of my own head.
No, you're right. I was reading a synopsis about it this morning because I wanted to remember. Because the entire premise of that movie, and again, I'll talk about this next week on the Man of Steel cast, is that Lex is able to clone Superman by using a strand of his hair that he has on display at a museum. That holds up like a, what is it, a ton weight or something like that? A 2-ton weight? Something insane like that.
That sounds
but, yeah. but yeah, it's kind of like, and then we kind of, and then, you know, like they had to bring her back with Superman Returns, so what do you do? Oh, that one night stand they had, she had a kid. So, yeah.
That's the tumbleweed, though, going through.
I would also say, I don't think she was uninspired. I just don't remember her in that role as Lois Lane in Superman Returns.
Yeah, Kate Bosworth was miscast, I think. She's a pretty face, but she doesn't really stand out at all in the movie.
Yeah, Lois Lane needs a presence.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't have that. She seems very timid and meek as to what it should be. Especially once, you know, Margaret Kidder, Terry Hatcher, even, I don't remember if she joined Smallville at the time, but Erica Durant.
Erica Durant was a really good Lois Lane in Smallville. Kept me, because I was going to stop watching it sooner, but she came in it in season 4, I think, and then I stuck with it for a bit longer, because, you know, she was obviously, like, really attractive, but she was good in the character as well. It was, like, this quite strong, badass chick.
With her in an artist skimpy outfit.
Yeah, like, well, you know, that didn't know, but... she was but, good as the character, though, as well, other than...
Yes, yeah, and then you have Kate Bessing, whatever, come in, and it's like... I'm not putting her on the bad. She's just, like, she has no screen presence in that role. Like, there's nothing to the character. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like we should end on a good note. So, one more from the good category. Oh, well, here's an easy one, and it should be because it's been like 50 times. Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
Oh, that's the one I was thinking of, actually.
That's actually a good one. That's a very good one.
Yeah.
Because no matter how bad the movie, and he's been in some real stinkers at this point.
Yeah.
I think that he's been in more terrible ones than good ones.
He loves playing Wolverine, by golly.
He's good at it as well, though. That's the thing. He's really, like, just good as just, like, the just Logan and Wolverine. When it's, like, the badass fight scenes with his claws, or if it's the more quiet, emotional scenes with Jean and X-Men 2, he's really good.
His little cameo in X-Men First Class is pretty glorious.
Yes.
It's like, hi, fuck you. Okay. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
I just hope. I mean, I like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I hope he doesn't dominate Days of Future Past too much, though, because I still want it to be
there's
a TV movie.
A lot of
like,
people in that film.
From the casting and the characters, I feel like a lot of these people are going to get maybe 5 minutes of screen
time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They recently added Quicksilver, which is a whole other thing with that Marvel and Fox thing. But like, if they've just added Quicksilver when they've been filming for like a couple of months now, he's not going to be in it much, is he? Since they added him so late. But like, I mean, like, it's kind of cool how they're getting like a lot of the old cast back in the same roles. But you do have to wonder how they're juggling it all around. And so.
Because there's only so much time they have in that film.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so we shall see. But yeah, this was a fun little show.
Mm-hmm.
I would do Batman Versus, but I feel like we already talked about comic books the entire episode. So.
Yeah.
And we also want to try to keep this one short just because we are recording on the actual Friday. That said, I did want to bring up a poll position, just because that's ongoing on the site anyhow.
In the danger zone, pretty soon they'll be off on a mission.
Hydrofoil mode, Rhodey.
Hydrofoil engaged, Dan.
They listen to the show. last week's poll was a poll between General Zod and Lord Zed from Power Rangers.
Who ended up winning?
General Zod won.
Well,
it was 60-40, not a bad split.
Wow.
Like I said before, last week it was just a completely random poll.
I thought you'd pick them two because the names both start with Z.
Oh no, that was that, and they actually have titles like General and Lord. But like, it was random in the fact that like, my friend like did a band called Zed, I guess. And
there's a band called Zed out there.
My friend mentioned it. I thought he was talking about Lord Zed, but he was like, "No, I'm talking about a band." I'm like, "Oh," and for some reason that kind of reated in my head as to what was going to do a poll, because a lot of the times it's like, "Crap, it's Sunday. I need a new poll, and I have no idea what to come up with." Which is how this week's poll actually came up. It was because I was watching Arrested Development, and I probably shouldn't have done that because it has not been a fun poll this week. It was best streaming service, and so far, well, I'm not even going to say so far, it's the no competition. Netflix has the only vote. It's between Netflix, Amazon Instant, and Hulu Plus. I put them all up because they're all around the same price, but Amazon's winning its hands and away.
Amazon's so, yeah. Winning?
No, I mean Netflix is winning.
Oh, okay. That's not surprising.
It's funny.
No, not at all. I expected it to kind of be a competition, especially with Hulu Plus, because with Hulu Plus, like, Netflix is really good if you're kind of want to catch up on stuff, but Hulu's good if you miss stuff. Like, it's good if you want network TV and stuff like that the next day, or, you know, like, Netflix does seasons. Like, you won't get a season of The Office until, like, next, maybe October, or Hulu Plus will probably have the entire episode the next morning. So I thought, you know, it's basically between, like, how quickly you want your movies. I mean, your TV shows, I should say. That's it for this week. It's been a really hectic week on the site. We haven't really put up much new content. We're trying to get a bunch of stuff done behind the scenes. Hopefully that pans out soon. I still want to do, I'll talk about this off air. Check us out, you know, vote. Hopefully somebody supports anything other than Netflix on our weekly poll. This poll goes until Sunday. Sadly enough, there's no, my friend is out camping this week, so no drunken movie, which means I have to watch Superman 4 sober. Check out the Man of Steel cast. This week we did Supergirl. Next week is Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Anthony, and you can find Anthony most every other week now, bi-weekly, I guess, on the Comic Anvil podcast with Eric and Kyle.
Yeah,
the Anvil.
It is our first non-American podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I just realized that. Oh, yeah, okay. Representing.
Which is really funny, because I see you folks recording at 8, 10 in the morning. And it's
yeah,
like,
I feel
wow.
Bad for Eric sometimes. Like, although I suppose he's like up early with his kid anyway, but he gets up at like 8 a.m. just to record our show, and it's like, oh, wow. Anyway.
You catch me and Wesley Wiki on this show, Nerds on the Rocks. We'll be back next week. Hopefully we have a full house. I have a very interesting idea if we do have a full house, but we shall see how that goes. So I want to thank Anthony again, Wesley, and myself. This has been Nerds on the Rocks episode 134.